It was too long from between the last time when you did come see Yuri, and I thank you. I thank you and all those people that sent condolences and heartfelt sympathy.
You don't need to thank me. It felt good. It was, you know, it's the right thing to do. I mean, I was really shocked because when I was there, he looked like he was going to make it, you know?
It just didn't happen this way. It was just too...
I guess an unfamiliar environment is stressful to anyone.
In any case, we have a lot of conversations recorded, and I've been listening to his conversations, and his voice always sounded good. It came back. It's interesting now. I felt listening to him, he could be here right now talking with us. And some of the things is what we were talking about, you and I, that a week ago was when the Schaefer Music Festival happened in 1975, summer of 1975, where you got together in 72, 73?
Well, yeah, maybe the later part of 72. We didn't even know that Yuri played the violin. I mean, that, you know, we knew he was a great guitar player. I mean, I had heard him many years before, and flat picker, singer, all that. And then I don't know what possessed him. He said he played violin, and I was just like, wait, back up the truck, you know?
Tell me what that means, flat picking.
Oh, okay. That means it's like... You're using a flat pick and you're picking notes separately, like almost like you, like people pick a mandolin. But the best I can describe it to, if you wanted to hear what flat picking is, was one of his idols. It was Doc Watson. It's a, I guess it's a purely American, like Appalachian style of guitar picking. But, and it's like, you have to be pretty nimble and precise. Otherwise it's horrible. But, that's what, that's the best way I could describe it. Nobody asked me that question, but picking single notes.
You wrote about that on Facebook. And that.
Yeah.
And I remember Yuri was talking about Doc Watson. He mentioned him a couple of times. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know how it fit.
Listen to him. Listen to Doc Watson. You'll know. But he was proficient at it. Not many people were doing that at the time. You know, so we didn't even know about the violin. And that was just like, oh, man. And that's when things really took off because nobody was playing violin in the clubs. You know, it's like nobody.
That's true. One of the things that Yuri was also saying is that he felt that you and Andy were and Stan were influenced by Buffalo Springfield.
We were. And yeah, well, that was like the beginning of kind of roots of country rock, because they're mixing rock and country. Obviously later on, you know, two of them went on to create Poco, Messina and Richie Fury. So yeah, I guess that's fair. That's pretty fair. And, you know, we were experimenting, you know, and then when Yuri moved in with us, the latter albums of Beach Boys we were really into because of the vocals and stuff, and we were experimenting with things, and you know what, we didn't have a plan, it just happened. You know,
well, tell me how it happened that he moved in with you.
I was on College Avenue, Rutgers campus in New Brunswick, walking down the street, going to cross the street, and there's Yuri at the light. I said, hey, you know, we're just chatting, and I said, you know, I got this threesome, why don't you come by and, you know, like sit in with us. And he did. Next thing you know, he moved in with us. It was a three-man dorm room. I don't know how we got four people in it, but then we had our speakers for, you know, like the PA system in there and all this. It was crazy, but yeah, just like that, you know. And he sang too, to top it off. He sang and he wrote. Yeah, we were like, at one point we were just, hey, I think we got something here. Yeah.
We're probably going to jump around a lot, but I want to talk about the faction instead.
What did that exactly mean?
It seemed that, I think when I joined the band, or before there ever was a band, It's just that I was older. I don't know if I ever really fit in, but I did, and yet I didn't, and I'm going in circles. What I really mean to say is every time there was a new member that came into the band, like after the original four of us, Andy, Jerry, Stan, and myself. And
I thought it was Craig.
No, he wasn't originally in the band.
Oh.
No, the four of it was the three of them, Stan, Andy, and Jerry, were called Pickleweed.
Okay.
So, right? Then I joined and became Kinderhook Creek. It was the four of us. We had no drummer yet. We were looking for a drummer.
But you were performing?
Not yet. Okay. No, we had nothing to perform yet. Okay. We had to learn all these songs. I had to learn how to play fiddle. It was just a massive effort into, okay, you're going to play that, you're going to play that.
We needed a bass player who said, you're elected to Andy. Poor guy.
Andy was never a bass player. But it was interesting how the assignments went. Well, who's going to do what? We wanted a pedal steel player. So Stan bought a Hawaiian guitar without the pedals and just that neck. And he started practicing. And he got good at it. You know, he's that kind of guy that when he goes to do something, does it very well. You know, he played by complete rote. In other words, he never changed his patterns. He memorized them. And he would play consistently like that. And all his solos were basically the same over and over. But that was consistent. That was good.
When did you get the drummer?
In 1974, I think Craig joined. So Craig came in and everybody went, oh, wow, this is great. Mm-hmm. And he can sing. Well, Craig had his own band called the Lords or something before that, when they were in high school, and they did pretty well for themselves. Oh, it was just opening up floodgates here.
We're in the dorm.
From the dorm, I don't know. I think we just needed the room, and we were making too much noise in the dorm. Yeah, we were like in an engineering section. It was serious, and like we were blasting music, and these guys are trying to study. I remember one time somebody knocked on the door and Andy goes, who is it? He said, friends. He said, go away. We have no friends. But anyway, so I guess we just decided, you know, some of us dropped out and that's what happened. We decided we're going to do this like seriously, you know? And so we rented the house. I forget how that happened. Yeah. So we parked cars. We were next to a restaurant, parked cars.
Racketeers.
Yep. I don't know how Yuri survived because he was like, I don't want to call him a neat freak, but we are slobs. That must have been really rough. We had another guy that moved from the section. I don't know, somehow, and this guy Charlie Willis. So it was him, me, Andy. Like he had four other guys, you know, like sharing a refrigerator. Boy, that could be. Not that we had much food in the refrigerator, because we were poor. I'm telling you, hand to mouth.
We lived there probably for a year, a little more, and practiced every day. We were learning our instrument and learning to sing together, working on the vocals. I was always arranging things. We had this guy, Charlie Willis, that lived there. There was four of us, Andy, Stan, Jerry, me, and pedal steel guitar, and started shedding, woodshedding, practicing. Mm. We all did.
It's called woodshedding?
Yeah, shedding, yeah. Yeah, you lock yourself up in the woodshed and you practice in the old days. Because somebody should... Yeah, that's what we all call it. I don't call it that.
Everybody does?
Everybody does.
Everybody went to the woodshed?
Yeah, I all fit in. At one time. I had my little corner. and play my little violin. Yeah, well, you know, I played guitar and fiddle. It was an interesting time. But as it grew, I was getting to that factionalism. I just want to define it. You know, you have a group of people you work with all the time. Yet the ones that are weaker aren't coming up to your specs. Then there's one guy or two that are really good. So they start factionalizing again, plotting, you know. Joe joined in 75. He taught me a lot about jamming. Listen to him and free form. You know, but you really have to learn your instrument. And I wasn't really that in control of playing or in command of playing. The kind of fiddle playing that was the bluegrass, which is the fast, you know, technical instrumentation and playing your instrument with flair and virtuosity. And then there's the country, various forms of country. And then there's the rock. And then how do you make a violin or fiddle fit into a rock situation, right? And Joe played a lot of that. He grew up basically mimicking Pete Townsend. The Who were his heroes. Big sounds, right? And that amazing technique that you have when you play. What I want to pick up on was the faction issue. When you're working with the same people and living with them too, testosterone can get in the way. So that's how Joe became very arrogant. And he drew me into that arrogance. When Joe joined the band, and being such a precise and professional already, and excellent player, I mean, he just added so much to the band. Technically, sound-wise, just everything about him spoke, wow, this guy's a contender. Yeah, he can play. But he had that kind of personality where, see, he didn't become a partner, so he's just a hired gun. So at times he goes, he demanded being paid equally, equal pay, equal work, you know, that kind of stuff. But he didn't have, we should have said, well, good, then you have to chip in on, you know, all the, you have to invest in the band. If you want to be a partner or if you want to be equal pay, equal work or whatever, it doesn't work that way. You know, we weren't smart enough to say, okay, we got scared. So yeah, well, sure. And even Neil suggested that because then he had his taxes taken out. He could collect unemployment. So that's a whole issue, man, that later on came to bite us in the ass. It was interesting. Joe would come in and be very demanding, but he deserved it. You know, it's truly deserved.
How did you get to Schaefer Music Festival then in that short period of time?
I'll tell you, somehow, I don't know, there's a place called Little Brown's in Madison. And somehow we got an audition there, right? And it was a very popular place with a lot of, like, I guess at the time, you'd call them yuppies. Anyway, there was a guy that saw us there. And he was a marketing executive on Madison Avenue, the real thing, big way up there. His name was Neil Garen. He had connections. That's pretty much it. I mean, but that was a huge leap.
He was your first manager.
Yes, yes, he was.
And Yuri spoke very highly of him. He said he had you organized as a business, that you had health insurance, you had a retirement plan.
Yeah, yeah, all that. And we also had, you know, this was before emails, but we had a mailing list, which was, I mean, this guy was a marketing genius. He knew how to do things, clearly. And I guess what happened is he wanted us to move to Nashville, and we had resistance. I guess we were enjoying our little big, being big fish in a little pond or afraid, I'm not sure, but that's how the rift happened. And next thing you know, we're stuck in clubs, and oh, that's, be careful what you wish for, you know?
Tell me about the Schaefer event that night.
Blackberry brandy.
You had stage fright.
I looked out on the stage, I was trembling. I mean, 25,000 people, that's what they estimated, you know, because everybody besides the Woman Rink everybody was sitting on the cliffs all around and everything. Yeah, but it was really, it was crazy because we're doing a sound check and Tim Schmidt knocks, I'm standing talking to Andy, he taps me on the back and goes, "Hey, you guys sound great. I'm Tim Schmidt." And I'm like, my knees were wobbling and I'm like, I know. Nobody let me forget that. Yeah, it was surreal. It's hard to describe, you know. And we got an encore, New York audience, you know. That ain't easy, you know.
I think that was one of the stories that Yuri told me, how Ron Delsner was really ticked off that you guys were still on stage when Poco was supposed to go out or something like that. Did you hear anything about that?
I don't remember that. But I get it, yeah, especially because he probably didn't want us there in the first place because we were an assigned act, you know? And, you know, I mean, he had his...
Something happened here, and I don't... Let me pause it. You are a wealth of information. This is great stories. And anyone else, I would love to hear from them as well, because I'd like it to be a conversation with other people that were part of it. It's something that people remember, and that's why they keep coming back to your shows.